You know, the good thing through life, through living with Mike, is that I see the benefit of facing fears and not letting them stop me as often.
This is the HBIC Podcast, our Discipleship Weekly, where we talk with folks from HBIC and dig into the practical side of following Jesus in their lives. I'm Ryan Cagno. Today I talked with Peggy Smellman, who is a capital D delight, about her life with her husband Mike and her four kids and kind of some of the wildness and risks they took and interesting things that they did, and about Peggy confronting her own fears in her desire to be faithful to what Jesus is calling her family and her to do in life. Really good conversation. Enjoy, subscribe. New episodes weekly on Fridays. Peggy Smellman, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Ryan Cagno.
What took you so long getting on here?
An invitation.
Oh, yikes. Fair enough. Well, better late than never. Here we are.
Yes.
It's great to have you on the pod. You've been a part of HBIC for...
a long time. I mean, when we think about it, I think it was probably about 1994-ish.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know what I was doing in 1994?
Were you born?
Yeah, I was born. I was watching Power Rangers during nap time up in my room, probably, in 1994,
yes.
Or playing Legos or being generally a kindergartner.
Right.
But I was alive. Thank you for asking that. Okay, so 1994. And you grew up in this general area or no?
Yes. So when I was born, we were living in Perry County on a farm.
Yeah, as one does in Perry County.
Yes. And then we moved to Carlisle while I was still young. Grew up mostly in Carlisle.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where'd you meet Mike?
That's an interesting story. So Mike was best friends with my sister's boyfriend who became her husband. And so I would run into him through them. But when I first met him, so there's a 5.5 year age difference. So I was in my teens, he was in his 20s. Always admired him, but you know, we were of different ages.
Sure.
And all of that. So, yeah.
Later on in life, kind of.
Yeah. So then I had always admired Mike, and then he was in his 20s, I was in my 20s, and we both ended up working at a Christian school that my brother-in-law was running. And then when we got serious, I was a little intimidated by him in the sense that we used to call it being a flamer. And a flamer was someone who just was sold out to God, and he was very much that. And I wanted to be that, but I was sort of like the character Much Afraid, you know, I guess. I forget what book that was, but so, you know, as we were talking about marriage, I said that to him. I said, I don't know that I can be as flaming as you are. And but we joined ranks, and it's been a good adventure. His promise was it won't be boring. and he lived up to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems it hasn't been.
Yes.
So that's kind of why you admired him when you were younger, too, is just that general kind of, okay.
Right, yeah. He and my sister and brother-in-law were in college, and it was like the Jesus movement. And it's also when I came to the Lord, too, only I was in high school in Carlisle. So anyway, yeah.
So you were teens in the, or you were a teen in the 70s?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you kind of have like almost a tie-dye kind of like vibe going on right now.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it stayed with you.
Your
flower child thing. Is that the right decade?
He was more so than me. In fact, my dad didn't like him because he and Jerry would come to our house to visit Gloria, and they both had long hair and beards, and you know, they looked the part.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
were the part.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was.
Yeah, so it hasn't been boring. I know
no.
some of the story, but we can share it for the podcast, I guess. Like when you say it hasn't been boring, like what all wild stuff have you guys done in your life?
Well, we had four children on very little income.
That's not boring.
That's not boring. And, well, one of the most exciting and life-impacting for me and our whole family was back in the 90s, Mike was doing a... Well, we had gone to Youth with a Mission, thinking that was the direction we were going to go. And ended up it wasn't. And so when we came back, we were living in New Jersey.
Do you mean like you were going to work for them?
Yes. So yeah. We went through their program. We thought it was going to be our life to be a part of that or something like it.
So did my wife.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Then she met me and, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do then? You got to you gotta adjust. But anyway, right. Go on. Went to New Jersey.
Yes. So anyway, short version. Mike was just doing different jobs to support us as a family, but it wasn't really what he was gifted in. So we had a conversation one time, so what would you do if you could do anything? Mm-hmm. And we had volunteered a few times at Paxson Street Home as a family and really loved the spirit of the place. He said, I would love to get a job there. I'm like, amen, let's do that. And so... he talked to people and they didn't have any openings. And then we got a call, 2 months later, and he got off the phone and said, so they have this job. And so what it would mean is our family would live there with men who are dealing with mental illness and different issues. And that's where the conversation stopped for me. I was like, we're looking for a job for you. We're not looking for a change for our family. And so we had four young children. Mental illness scared me. Harrisburg scared me. You know, I'm the old, much afraid. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a long conversation then. But I went to bed and woke up and I thought, what if this is a door that God's opening for us? And I thought, I am much afraid of this. And so I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. I just kept struggling. Would I be willing to do these things that scare me so much? Because I had some experience through our church with a woman who had mental illness. And I just felt consumed and didn't know how to help. And I just felt helpless in helping her. And so I got up that morning and I said, I'm willing to talk to them, but I have a lot of questions. And I literally had a legal pad. Every line was questions. And mostly it was about safety for our children and just how does this work? I mean, I admire it from a distance, but what's it mean when you're there? And so through a process of talking to lots of people and praying and even taking our children there to have dinner with the men who lived, it was called Blue Gables at that time. And we just had a wonderful time with them. They were just guys, you know, and met the people that lived next door who happened to be Steve and Elizabeth Schwartz, who became best friends.
Yeah.
And they... Their side of the house, they lived with women. Our side, we lived with men. And so that whole experience, we lived in that house for about 3 years. It was life-changing. It was hard, but it was great in so many ways. It was the kind of thing where I was really glad that we had taken time and prayed a lot about it because there were parts about it that were very hard. Hmm. Just to share a home with other people was difficult, but good. And the thing that makes me really happy about it is our children, when we moved, they were 4, 8, 10, and 12 years old. And so... Our three oldest ones especially, if someone asked them, what's the best thing your parents did for you in raising you? They would say, we lived at Paxson Street Home.
Hmm.
And so they grew up just seeing people not with diagnoses, but, you know, that's just the guys we live with. And then the whole ministry, they would go up and volunteer and be a part of that too. And there were a lot of children, staff children there, and so they had friendships, and it was just a part of their growing up. So we were all blessed to be there. And then we continued. We didn't always live in the house at Blue Gables. Our girls, especially, were becoming teenagers. We just felt like it's time for us to have our own home again. But Mike worked there for, I'm not even sure, 30 years, something, 25 or 30. And then went back, and we've always volunteered, and then now he's the chaplain there, which is a thrilling thing. He's a really good fit for that. So that was when people say, where have you really seen God move in your life? Where did you take a chance? That's always the top answer in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. To go from that wedding vow of, you know, it won't be boring, and kind of some of your initial, like, I don't know if I am quite on your kind of, like, I don't want to say not on your level, but you felt some trepidation of,
right,
like,
I did,
maybe not doing those kind of wilder things. And then, mm-hmm. yeah, the 1-2 punch of YWAM, and then kind of this immersive living with folks at Paxton Street. I mean, you did, in spite of your fears.
Right.
Kind of go through that. And it's cool to hear, and not necessarily surprising to hear, that it had that effect on your kids. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's very few children are given, I want to say, given that opportunity.
Right.
To see their parents live in that way. I think that's so powerful. As a quick kind of aside, have you seen that bear fruit with your kids at all in terms of their lives, or like the decisions they make? You know, where are they on like the risk taker spectrum?
They're very much like their father.
Okay.
Yeah. They all live lives of service, of thinking about others, you know, not necessarily always through their jobs, but yeah, they have a comfort with people, and it's impacted them, their personalities, their values, their maturity in being with others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I know that those 3 years, it was like an all family, all hands on deck. We're all kind of doing this together.
Mm-hmm.
When then you just had your own home and he continued to work at Paxton, was your primary vocation for a certain amount of years, it was primarily as a mother and taking care of the home, or?
I worked outside the home a good bit of the time.
Thanks.
So I'm an occupational therapy assistant, okay. is my area of schooling. And so I did that job at different places.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I worked everything from preschool children to the hospital to nursing homes, and another program called a life program for older folks who live in the community. It was like a day kind of program, really interesting program.
And OTA, you're doing like, you're working on like fine motor skill type things, and
mm-hmm.
Just kind of like the basic,
yeah, so
day to day like functioning things.
Right. So it has to do with all sorts of areas, but my last few jobs were with older adults and helping them to do the day to day stuff with whatever their disability would be.
Yeah.
So a lot of going into their homes and helping to make sure, do you have the right equipment to be safe in the bathroom and in just in your home, and what's the best way to do different things that are of value to you. And so it covers that in a hospital setting or a rehab, it's much more, let's get your strength and dexterity and fine motor and all of that sort of thing going. But it always has to do with, well, the primary thing, at least in my practice, was helping people to live their lives more fully with whatever's going on in their life. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Your quality of life thing, yeah.
Yeah, quality of life.
What was there a specific kind of motivation for you to get into that field that you could remember?
I wanted to do, I always liked working with my hands. And when I looked into OT, it looked like you could use creating things like using woodworking as a way to work on your dexterity, and you adapt it so that you could do it. Because I, from the time I was a child, I loved tools and making things out of wood or leather or anything where I saw an article about it. It's like, oh, I could do that. Mm. So I've always enjoyed making things. And so that's what drew me to OT. I had also thought about physical therapy, but I thought, ah, that's kind of more boring because you have to just do exercises and stuff, where OT, you're free. Oh, we could use gardening because that could work on your standing or your ability to do things one-handed. I mean, let's figure that out so you could keep doing that. And that's why I went to OT, but it ended up that a lot of my time I was working with older adults. And so I got to use that sometimes, but also I always wanted to be in a helping kind of job. And so OT allows that. And so I'd worked a lot with children, and then my my parents, as they got older, both developed dementia, needed a lot of assistance. And my mom actually came to live with us when she wasn't safe at home anymore. And so having her with us all the time for a few years just showed me how much it means to give good care to older people. And so that's when I started working at rehabs and nursing homes in this life program, because I thought, I want to treat people like I wish, like I knew my mom was treated, because she also ended up going to Messiah Village the last year. And the best compliment I ever got at one of those jobs was, I wish my mom could have you for her therapist. I mean, she wasn't at the rehab or anything, mm-hmm. but she said, if she ever got there, I wish you could do it, because you treat people really like they're your own mom. And I said, that's who I think about when I'm here. I think about my mom and dad, and it's not just the therapy, but how you interact with them with respect and gentleness. And yeah, so I did enjoy that job.
Is there a connection that you make to your faith when you're in those settings, or a way that kind of your vocation in that way kind of is inspired by your faith in Jesus?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do want to be a light, you know, and encourage people in God when I'd have the opportunities. One cool thing, I worked at Spring Creek for a while, and it was a hard place to work.
Yeah.
It really was. And I was not there real long, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't know about this. And so we had this big gym that everybody would come to for therapy. And so it's just packed with people. And, you know, you just have certain ones that you're working with. And so there was this older African-American lady who I'd never seen in there before. And she called me over. And I don't remember her exact words, but she said something like, we need you here. And I thought, Jesus, is that you? Mm. You know, and so it's what kept me there, mm-hmm. because I just felt like, am I making a difference? This is kind of crazy here. And so anyway, it was great to have that encouragement. And I really did think maybe she was an angel. Anyway.
Yeah. kind of words that can keep you going for another.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They did keep me going.
I worked for maybe a year and a half prior to going to seminary. I worked at a day program for adults with developmental disabilities in Hershey called Hope Springs Farm. By the way, we always fantasized about having an OT at that day program because we were like, we couldn't like afford it, I don't think, to hire one, but it was always kind of like, if we're ever like fully staffed and have, for some reason, have enough to hire more, like having an OT would be so good here. Mm-hmm. These are folks that generally weren't working, living in group homes. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't residential, it was just a day program. But man, some of the most... That was some of the more meaningful work that I've done in my life. It felt more meaningful than some of the things I do in like a official ministry setting. And I should say, like, really challenging, really, there's a lot of times and situations where you're just like, how did I even get here? Like, what are we, you know, it's like a hobby farm. So I'm like working with adults with developmental disabilities and we're like mucking a horse stall. And I'm like, I don't know how to muck a horse stall. I guess we're figuring this out together. We're just like, you know, so many stories that I could get into of just like crazy stuff that happened. And humbling stuff, helping people go to the bathroom and cleaning up after them. And, but it was in those kind of moments. I think I remember one specific moment where I was helping an individual like in the bathroom, in like the mall food court bathroom after they'd just totally messed themselves and just had this moment of like, man, what, like, how did I get here for one? But then two, kind of like there was something when you get into that humbling situation and you're caring for folks in these kind of humble settings or phases of their life or whatever that felt really sacred and really close to Jesus.
I know what you're saying.
You do know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I do. Actually, at one point I was between jobs and I looked at Hope Springs Farms.
Okay.
But yeah. I didn't end up there.
A strange and beautiful place.
Yes.
A strange and beautiful place for sure. And I only spent a year and a half there before I went to seminary in Jersey, but yeah, just kind of like humbling and, taught me a lot about service, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, taught me like you're capable of doing more than you think you are. Mm-hmm. But for me, every day it was like before my feet would hit the floor getting out of bed, I was just like, am I really going to do this again today? Right. And it was like, I guess so. And just kind of just take a deep breath and brush your teeth and go do it. And
right.
It was like,
yeah,
man, wild. But we did it by the grace of God.
Yeah. Henry Nouwen, I really like him. And he talks a lot about those kind of things because the last thing he did in his life for I'm not sure how long, but worked with, what was that called?
L'Arche. Yeah, I think it was like 8 years-ish, something like that, the last 8 years of his life.
Right, and he just wrote books and did talks about living with people with physical and mental disabilities and the whole gamut of what that means. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, he was like a Harvard, Yale guy, like a,
right,
you know, scholar, and then spent the last decade of his life basically. And I had a friend that worked in a L'Arche community for 2 years, I think, in Washington State. And that is full-time residential. You were living with them,
mm-hmm,
all the time.
Right.
And the mutuality and the... just shared life is a really beautiful thing in that, mm-hmm, scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. We looked at doing that. We actually,
of course,
visited several L'Arche centers, but decided not to because it is so consuming and we didn't want to take away from family life to that degree, moving to those places and just, I don't even know how much you ever get off, but.
Yeah, it's a step away from joining a monastery.
Yes.
Basically.
Right. We weren't quite ready for that.
No, not with kids and potential grandkids.
Yes.
And
I mean, our kids were out of the house and our parents had all died. And yeah, we had said when that happened, when we didn't have responsibilities, we could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we seriously looked at different possibilities besides L'Arche and decided, you know what? God really has planted us here in Harrisburg. We have so many connections and opportunities. Why do we think we have to leave?
Yeah. Yeah.
To find that.
Yeah, it's cool though that was your thought when your kids were all out and stuff, and you didn't have the responsibility of, like, we could do anything, and you don't necessarily mean go on cruises twice a year.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Play more pickleball. You're thinking like, what's a cool way we could serve that wouldn't be constrained by having kids? Yeah, that's great. So in this phase of your life now, how are you occupying yourself missionally or otherwise?
Well, I retired, I always forget, 2 or 3 years ago. And I love it. I have all kind of freedom. I did not overcommit myself to anything, which I'm really happy for. And I have several things that I do regularly, the food bank and volunteer at Paxson, but I also have time. And so I spend time with some different people, and I'm available for different things. And we just had a new granddaughter who lives in Harrisburg.
Hey.
Our daughter Sarah and her husband Tony have a little girl named Sailor Joy, and she's not even 2 weeks old yet. And so I have the high privilege of helping them out, which I'm really excited about. And we have 3 other grandchildren who we love, but they don't live close to us. And so, yes, we have 2 in Florida and 1 in New Jersey. So New Jersey we do see. Florida, we don't see our grandchildren there nearly enough. So we're excited to see Sailor grow and be a part of her life more consistently.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago. I didn't know.
Yes. Yes.
Congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, she's a sweetie pie.
As you're talking, I'm just sitting here fantasizing about having time. And
yes, it is such a gift.
Not being overcommitted.
I am so happy.
Being able to be available and feel like you're available.
Yeah. The other thing I love about retirement is when I was working and it was a beautiful day, I'm like, oh man, why can't it just rain when I'm working? Because I love biking and gardening, and I help take care of a bluebird trail, and I just all kind of outside stuff, which that thrills me.
There's a bluebird trail over there in the Cumberland?
There's bluebird trails all over.
Oh.
Yes. I take care of one. It's at Lower Allen Park. There's 27 nests. And so I just check them every week and kind of document what's going on. Last year, 2 times found snakes in the bluebird nest.
Oh, my.
And we called it the Bluebird Cafe. It would just come eat
dark.
Them up. Yeah, it is dark. But I've become braver. I get sticks and pull those buggers out of there. But always it's too late. They've already killed everything in there.
No longer much afraid. You're pulling snakes
out. Not as much.
With.
Less afraid. But, you know, the good thing through life, through living with Mike, is that I see the benefit of facing fears and not letting them stop me as often.
You're no longer much afraid. There you go. You're fulfilling your original creation mandate as well. You are cultivating, you are protecting the creation from the serpent.
Yes. And yes, literally. Yeah.
Are there other ways in which you've begun to or found yourself over time facing fears head on, other things that come to your mind?
Yeah, just this past year, I always wanted to lead a book study by myself. Mike and I do it a lot together, but I wanted to do it by myself. And so I did a book group on the book Life Without Lack by Dallas Willard.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it. I was unsure about how it would be, which is usually my fear. How will it go? You know, what ifs, you know? And so it was a great experience. So that was a place that I had thought for a long time, I think I could do this, but then I never did. But I had the time, and it's a book that I really loved reading myself, but I thought I would love to talk to other people about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a good group, and we did that. So that was a recent thing where I fulfilled something that I wanted to.
Do you feel like, so I also can be a fairly fearful person, and I don't know, I feel there's kind of warring things in me. I have a lot of anxiety about things. Mm-hmm. So if I was doing in that, I'd have, yes, a lot of like worry that my fear would manifest in that way. Like, mm-hmm, just kind of anxiety about it. But there's something else in me that does kind of pull me towards trying stuff, doing new things. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just God calling and I feel like I should. I still tend to just be anxious about it for a lot of the time.
Yes.
And so, yes, for me, like, confronting fears is not like, and then I confronted the fear and I wasn't afraid of it anymore. It's, yeah, like, no, then I confronted the fear and I was still afraid the whole time, but I guess I just kept doing it.
Just keep showing up.
That's kind of how I feel. I mean, yeah, that's as an introverted kind of socially anxious person, like working in this job. There's a little bit of that, like, every day. It's like, well, still kind of afraid of this. Wish I was just home with my book, but here we go.
Yes.
You know, every Sunday morning, especially Sunday mornings are still, yes, like, but it's so many people, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know if it's the same for you of, like, now I vanquished my fears and I'm grabbing the snake by the tail and whipping it around, or it's just like you get used to living with the fear. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, one of my things is I worry way too much what people think. And I'm like, why does that matter to me so much? And so I try to get over that. Yeah. One of Nouwen's things, I don't remember the whole topic, but that Jesus was, during the temptation, one of the temptations was to impress.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I think that's me.
Mm.
And I was even praying with Mike this morning, you know, about coming, because this was, you know, a little scary, not knowing how this goes. And the thought came to me, don't try to impress. Just say the truth and or be real. So that's a good reminder for me. Stop worrying what people think.
Yeah. No one thinks about you as much as you think about you.
I remember reading that one. Yeah. Yeah. You think about these things. Other people have moved on or didn't even notice
that
or
tends
care.
To be, yeah. It's easy for me to tell that to other people. Obviously, yeah. I then think and perseverate and worry about X, Y, Z, but it's like there's no chance this person is given that interaction or a second thought or
right.
is
they
even
moved
thinking
on.
Twice. Everyone else is also self-obsessed and moving about life, thinking about themselves. So
yeah.
It's not to be worried about. Yeah, I very much understand. That's yeah. beautiful. Do you and Mike have, and this will be the last question I ask you, but do you and Mike have in these years, like a shared sense of mission or, you know, some people do like, this is our family, this is our, you know, our mission or what we want to be about.
Well, we had that thing that we thought when our parents had all died and our children were launched and on their own, that we would try to find something that would really where we felt like we were serving in a way that we were meant to. And so after searching the whole wide world, we thought, you know, we think it's here. And so just taking opportunities as they come to interact with people. I mean, it's nothing spectacular. It's like living life together and trying to stay sensitive to where God's already working and join them. And I love the idea of being called to fulfill who you were meant to be. I was just talking to Cedra this week, and I said, you probably don't remember this, but at some retreat or something, you were speaking, I don't remember what about, but you gave us all little flower pots. I love gardening, so that was significant. I still have it. But she said, this is a little flower pot. You were meant for more. Hmm. And when I was in elementary school, I had a teacher. She was a fun fifth grade teacher. And every month you had to do something different. It could be anything. It could be pictures, poetry, write a song, do anything. So one time I decided I was going to put on the play Rumpelstiltskin. So I wrote it. I starred in it. The wow. whole thing. Anyway, which is amazing because I was a very shy child. Yeah. And so anyway, she said to me afterwards, I think she even gave me a note. And she said, don't hide your light under a bushel basket. Well, I didn't go to a church that talked a lot about Bible verses, so I didn't even know what she was talking about.
What the heck is a bushel basket?
Yeah, I did know that because we bought fruit by the bushel.
Okay.
And
Perry County, I would not have known what it
was. Yes, I knew. And so anyway, just those two things, I'm like, if I don't start now, I mean, I am 68. When am I going to start? When will I start? Mm-hmm. So anyway, facing fears, yeah. And so Mike and I together, we don't have a specific plan. Mm-hmm. Just to serve God where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And after a promise that it wouldn't be boring, then came 40 years in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Well, we lived a couple other places, too. In fact, people would say, I am not even putting you in my address book because we keep crossing out your address.
There it is.
But yeah. This is where we have been the longest, for sure.
Yeah. Where else would you rather be?
I can't imagine.
Right? Me neither. Me neither. Peggy, thank you very much. This was awesome.
This was actually fun. Thanks, Ryan. I was afraid.
People always say that at the end of podcasts. And on one hand, I'm like, that's good. And then on the other hand, I feel like, well, what in the world did you think it was going to be?
I thought it was going to be scary.
Oh, well, that's me. Scary and hard to impress. But you managed anyways. So thank you.
Thank you.